Hi, this is Amy Ray from Indigo Girls, and you're listening to KDRT 101.5 FM, Davis, California.
Hi, you're listening to Art Plus on KDRT LP in Davis, California. Today we are very privileged to have as our guest Amy Ray from the Indigo Girls. Amy is a wonderful artist. She is an incredible activist and a wonderful human being who believes in social justice. Amy and the Indigo Girls support Low Power FM, and our radio station, KDRT, is one of 800 Low Power FM stations in this country. To do the interview, we selected one of the forces behind KDRT. Her name is Autumn Labbé-Renault. She has been working tirelessly on behalf of Low Power FM, and she is a great, great fan of the Indigo Girls. So here is Autumn Labbé-Renault to interview Amy Ray from the Indigo Girls. We hope you enjoy the show.
Closer I am to
Thank you, Labiba, for inviting me to step in today, and hello to our listeners. I am thrilled for this opportunity to speak with Amy Ray, who nearly defies categorization. One half of longtime musical duo The Indigo Girls, along with Emily Salyers, Amy is also a solo artist, indie record label founder and manager, and an incredible environmental and social justice activist. Along with Emily Salyers, she lends her time and talent to issues ranging from indigenous rights to biodiesel and from LGBT and other civil rights to media democracy. On June 21st, the Indigo Girls joined a broad coalition in support of the Local Radio Act of 2007. This legislation seeks to bring hundreds of low-power FM or LPFM stations to communities across the country. The impetus behind this bipartisan legislation springs from what I believe are the same values that created KDRT here in Davis. And that's a belief that local is good, that the airwaves are public domain, and that there really is a place for the music that's been pushed off the playlist of consolidated corporate media, not to mention the stories and viewpoints that are missing or suppressed. In a world of shrinking media outlets, LPFM stations play a vital role in supporting localism. Labiba invited me to do this interview today for two specific reasons. In my daily work, I'm the executive director of Davis Media Access, which is the home of public access channel Davis Community Television, as well as KDRT. One of my passions these past 4 years has been helping to develop and grow KDRT here in Davis. This year, that work is centered on the fight to save KDRT from potential encroachment by a commercial station. I'm also a tremendous fan of the Indigo Girls. If there's a soundtrack to the 20 years I've spent working on social justice and media democracy issues, then the Indigo Girls play the title track, and I'm not kidding about that. So it's a great pleasure I get to chat with Amy today about independent media, the Indigo Girls, her music, and activism. Welcome to the show, Amy, and thanks for joining us. To begin with, since we are calling from an LPFM, Low Power FM radio station here in Davis, California, I would like to hear more about your support of the Local Radio Act and LPFM radio. How did that come about?
Oh, wow. It started a long time ago, actually. I knew some people that had started this group called the Future of Music Coalition. It was an old friend of mine in the indie community, basically, and they just told us what was going on. This was probably 7 years ago, maybe, and you know, asked us to help out and go to D.C. and do some lobbying and talk to some different representatives and senators. And it was an issue that was really important to us because we had seen radio change a lot over the years of our career, especially with the telecommunications passing the law in 1996 when they passed that act that allowed a lot of radio stations to just become sort of huge monsters. And we just felt like we could see the community vibe sort of leaving our own communities when radio stations would disappear or stations that had done local broadcasting would stop because they were being owned by a big corporation now who said they couldn't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And felt that this was a way to help really tie communities back together and give them a voice. And we had also worked a lot, and we still do, with indigenous communities, and it was another way we could see the connection, you know, between our music and some of the community work we do in general, where if there can be a low-power station in neighborhoods, there's a way for language programming and local music and announcements about what's going on to get
right
out there. And so we just started working with Future Music Coalition, and over the years have just stepped in and done a little bit of lobbying, some letter writing, some phone calls, whatever we need to do.
Well, and helping spread the word, you know, among your fans and supporters, I think really helps up the profile for the issue. So that's great. I noticed tonight, and for our listeners, we're recording this on Friday and it's going to be too late, but tonight Bill Moyers is actually profiling LPFM and the Local Radio Act of 2007 on his show on PBS.
Oh, cool.
And his guest is Hannah J. Sassaman of Prometheus Radio, who's a friend of all of ours here at KDRT and does incredible work on behalf of this issue. So speaking of the Future of Music Coalition, I know that's just one of the many, many causes you and Emily support. Can you tell me about a few of the others and why? I'm particularly interested. I saw, related to your tour, something about an organization called Native Energy.
That's just one of the many things we do around Native issues is support through, we just donate money to them after tours to offset carbons, but that's like a tiny little thing that we do. And it's a great company, and they do work around renewables, mainly wind energy, and in Native communities help build big wind turbines to have. It's not only to create energy for the community itself, but it's to give a new economic base in Native communities of something that, of energy, of marketing energy that is not destructive and actually help bring them an economy.
And you do a lot of work on sort of indigenous rights issues as it is, right?
Yeah, we have a group called Honor the Earth that we started back in the early 90s with an activist named Winona LaDuke.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing environmental work. We met her at an Earth Day show and that she had spoken at, and we just decided to team up and sort of try to build a bridge between Native and non-Native communities and wage support for Native organizations that were already existing, you know, that were doing really amazing work and needed financial support and political support from the sort of non-Indian world out there. And so that's what we raise money and give grants and also go to different communities and play benefits and try
to... Yeah, folks play a lot of benefits. I saw on your website.
Yeah, we do, but those are the fun shows.
So kind of getting back to grassroots media versus corporate media,
mm-hmm.
you folks have been active in the indie music scene for more than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
What's it been like for you personally? You know, the difference between being an independent artist and being required to produce music that gets airplay, what's that, the push and pull like?
Well, the good thing about us, the lucky thing that we've had that's been fortunate in our lives is that we, even though we've been on major labels, we sort of started out making our own rules in that realm, and we haven't really had a lot of pressure. But we talk to all of our friends that are on major labels, and it's a nightmare, the pressure to have some kind of a radio presence or lose your record deal kind of thing. And
right.
I mean, that's the game that you play, though, when you go on a major label. I mean, it's a devil. You know, you're making a deal with a devil, and you know it. And it's like you can't really complain about it,
mm-hmm.
to be honest with you. The indie world is so different than that. And I've had an indie label since 89. And for me, it's like that's what I did in order to hang on to what I really believe in my heart. And Emily and I are slightly different in the way we would probably do our own career, indie versus major label and all that stuff, but we compromise and we find this middle ground, and we're able to do the politics we want to do and be on a label that has a lot of access and resources, and it sort of pleases both of us in many ways, and we've benefited from it. I mean, when we were on Sony for, like, I don't know how many years it was, 15 years or something, and there was a lot of things we got out of being on a major label, like when we went down and worked with the Zapatistas, we needed a bunch of video cameras, and they donated them, things like that. And I have a lot of respect for someone who just doesn't choose that path ever,
mm-hmm.
and just goes the indie route the whole way. I think it's amazing. And I think
like
now,
Danny DeFranco. And
yeah, and I think now it's more possible, actually not even to have a label.
Well, tell us a bit about your record label.
Well, I started back in 89 when we got signed to Epic, and it was a way for me to stay where my heart is, and I had a bunch of friends that were making great music, and I just started putting their records out and did everything myself for the first year or two, and then had friends that off and on worked for me over the years. Now I'm doing everything myself again. And we put out probably about 50-something records, and we put out...
Yeah, a lot of artists on there.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the artists that we have out that I'm really proud of is that we put this box set out by a guy named Utah Phillips.
Oh, love Utah.
Yeah, and we did it in a partnership with AK Press, and
mm-hmm.
It's like one of the things I'm really proud of, because it's
mm-hmm.
it's like the definitive sort of box set of his life. And
mm-hmm. But then it occurred to me, in my predicament, having the FBI open your mail might come in handy. I sent Sheila, my partner, a letter through the United States Mail, and I said in it, "For God's sake, don't plow up the backyard. That's where the guns are buried." National Guard rolled up, dug up the whole backyard in time for me to come back and plant the damn thing. Oh, I went to a bar and I asked for a drink. He gave me a glass and he showed me the thing. Hallelujah, I'm a bum. Hallelujah, I'm off again. Hallelujah, give us a
handout
to revive us again.
And we've had a lot of bands come and go, and I do my own records on the label too, but it's an activist label. We try to do everything with a social sort of bent.
What's the URL for that if people want to get more information?
It's DaemonRecords.com.
And that's DAEMON
records.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, DAEMON records.com.
Okay. And apart from that work, of course, you've been creating music as part of the Indigo Girls since, I think I have this right, the release of an eponymous EP, Indigo Girls, in 1985. I first discovered you in 1987 with Strange Fire.
Mm.
And in 2006, you released what looks to be about the 15th Indigo Girl albums, Despite Our Differences.
Mm-hmm.
I still believe, despite our differences, that what we have is enough. And I believe in you, and I believe in love. I believe in you, and I believe in love.
Now, I read on your website that this was a very different album for you folks to make. Can you speak to that?
I think what that's referring to is that we had just signed a new deal and were able to work with this producer named Mitchell Froom, who we have wanted to work with for a long time. And he wanted to do it in a very quick, you know, do it in 6 weeks, not mess around and not spend a lot of money, or and just kind of do it really quickly and make it really energetic and spontaneous. And that's what we did. And typically we take about 2 to 3 months to do a record. It's just kind of a sort of an intense process. It's like making two records with us. I think that's what that refers to. Is it's just got a certain freshness to it. After all these years, it's hard to make that happen, and we felt really good about it.
Yeah, you have some interesting collaborations on this album, too, Pink and Brandi Carlile.
Yeah.
I've listened to the album a lot, and in some ways, it feels more accessible than some of the earlier discs. It's really catchy, and yet, mm-hmm. true to form, it addresses some really weighty topics.
I feel love and I like to make it happen. What we get from your war walk, the ticker of the nation breaking down like a back clock. I want the pendulum to swing again, so that all your mighty men ain't worth just spitting in the wind. It doesn't come by the full width. It's not persuaded with your hand.
I was driving through here in Davis. We're in the midst of a very rural, agriculturally based community that's losing that agricultural to subdivision. So I was actually driving the back roads the other day listening to They Won't Have Me, and you're talking about the subdivision, man. So can we talk about a couple of the songs on the album?
Yeah.
And sort of, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Pendulum Swinger and They Won't Have Me.
Well, Pendulum Swinger is a song that Emily wrote, and it's basically like her song. I think it's like her feminist, like, state of the nation address, basically.
Yeah, a great song.
And, you know, it attacks the patriarchy and Bush and the warmongers. And I think it's like a very poppy way to approach a dire situation, which is a specialty of hers. That's a really fun one. And that's been a single for us, too, which is interesting to see whether radio would play that or not.
Well, yeah, there's a couple language issues on a couple of your songs here that, you know, I've got to beep those if I'm going to play them on the radio.
Yeah, there were language issues and I think some political issues with that one, where some stations just kind of shied away from it. So.
Well, not on LPFM.
That's good.
So do you have a favorite song from the album?
I really like Rock and Roll Heaven's Gate a lot because
yeah.
because the Pink collaboration was so fun, and the song was really close to my heart because it was sort of written as a tribute to some friends of mine and some different bands that broke up, and as my way of saying, like, you've done great stuff and just, you know, carry on. And
talk about They Won't Have Me. What's the story behind that one?
Well, I live in a rural community, and I've lived in it for about 15 years or 16 years, and I've watched the farms disappear and really a lot of the woods get plowed down for huge subdivisions that are built, you know, in a very quick way, hazardly, not very good houses,
yeah.
sort of overpriced, and then it becomes a commuter community. And I just felt like my neighbors, I watched the people that were the fabric of the community sort of become demoralized and lose any sort of sense of self. And I think in my community we deal with a lot of meth addiction and a lot of problems that plague the rural United States, I'd say. So I think they're all tied together. And that song was sort of looking at just the demoralization and what happened. And then I was looking at myself and my relationship to my community. And I'm so radical left compared to all my neighbors, and it's hard to have that dialogue at first and to feel that they understand I'm on their side in so many ways. And I think that that's what I was sort of struggling with a little bit, is feeling like this is where I want to be, and this is where I want to put my hands in the earth and get my hands dirty and work and save this place. But because I'm gay and so left-wing, I feel that it's hard. That's a hurdle you have to get over first in order to do that work. Those people is have them accept you. And it happens. It totally happens. The people accept you. You dialogue. You break down barriers that way. And you just have to be willing to have faith that you can overcome that. That's something that we've dealt with in doing indigenous work. A lot of the work we do, we've had to sort of get past the sexuality issue and have people accept us for what we're offering.
They won't have me, but I love this place. The rural life is broken, the farmland's gone to chase. My hands are idle, my needs rest. Toil of the decent, sleep of the best. Thank you.
Right. Well, so much of your music and so many of your lyrics, to me, they speak to more about what unites us as a people as opposed to what divides us.
Yeah.
And how it's all connected.
Yeah.
For the Indigo Girls, you know, the hallmark of your music together is your amazing harmonies, which is kind of mind-blowing to me considering how different your voices are and your styles. How do you two find agreement on what makes it onto an album?
It's not that hard, actually, after all these years. I mean, we have, like, faith in the process, basically, and we write songs separately, and when we're getting ready to do a record a couple months before, we start getting together at one of our houses and just muscling through everything. We make tapes for each other, and we write the lyrics out and work out just sort of the basic chords and stuff, and then we just start there and go, okay, what instrument am I going to play on this? Mandolin, guitar, banjo, you know, and then we keep going, and in the end of the process, if a song's just not flourishing with both of us, then we go, that's not a song we can
do
together.
Yeah.
And we just know it. We don't really argue about it.
Galileo said what's on the block. Looking up the truth, and as the bombshells of my daily fears explode, I try to trace them to my youth. And then he had to bring up the reincarnation over a couple of beers the other night. And now I'm serving time for mistakes made by another in another life.
Let's talk for a minute about your solo projects. You released Stag in 2001 and Prom in 2005, and then Amy Ray and the Volunteers Live from Knoxville last year. What drives you as a solo artist versus your music as an Indigo Girl?
It's just a different part of me. I'm the rocker. And
yeah.
I think it's the underground community more than anything, probably, though, because I have a lot of people I want to play with and friends that I want to make music with, and I want to make records in an arena that's completely independent, and this is the way to do it for me, you know, to make solo records and work with my friends and voice a different side of me. And now it's just as important to me as Indigo Girls, and it's hard to fit it all in, but it just makes me so happy that I just do it.
Another part of who you are. Well, this is probably an unfair question, but who are your major musical influences?
Wow. A lot of them are like, just like indie people that I know from people that I've worked with from Atlanta. There's a band called the Rocketeens from Atlanta. They're not together anymore, but they have about 5 records out. And they were a huge influence on me at a certain point on my songwriting. And Magna Pop is another band. And there's a songwriter named Danielle Howell from South Carolina who has done quite a lot of recording. And she's a folk artist and also a punk artist. Like, she goes between the two, which is something I saw early on and went, oh, I can do that.
Yeah, and you do. Yeah.
You know, that's like something I want to do, and she really influenced me. And as far as big artists, Patti Smith, The Clash, Ricky Lee Jones, James Taylor. When I was really young, I knew every James Taylor song. And
oh, yeah, what a songwriter, huh?
Yeah, I just really studied how he put words together, and I don't know, in that field, to me, he was like the cream of the crop. I really like a lot of indie punky sort of alternative stuff that's political. There's a band called The Coop. It's a hip-hop group. I like them a lot. They're from the Bay Area. They really do a lot of good political sort of lyrics. So it varies. It runs the gamut for me.
Just really curious to ask you that question. So it looks like the Indigo Girls will be spending a lot of time touring in Canada and Australia later this year. But before you head there, you have a couple of really interesting gigs coming up. I noted the 9/11 Power to the Peaceful in San Francisco on September 8th, and then a benefit for Sweet Home New Orleans on September 16th. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, well, Michael Franti does this Power to the Peaceful event in San Francisco, and it's become like a yearly thing, and he asked us to do it. And it's just this huge festival, and it's all about peace. tolerance and humanity.
And, you know, Michael Franti has a Davis connection. He spent some time here as a kid, so so we all love him.
Well, we do, too. We tour with him quite a bit. Well, he's just a really special man. And then the Sweet Home New Orleans is the second benefit we've done in New Orleans this year, and we're raising money to help bring back the displaced musicians and to build houses for them. And it's a great project. There's information on that on indigogirls.com. And we did one benefit that was like a group effort that actually Future Music Coalition organized with Air Traffic Control, where we went and did a workshop weekend in New Orleans and talked to different activists and saw what was going on there now, and then played a big show and raised money for this group. And now we're going back on our own and doing that. So,
because there's still a lot of work to be done down there. And, you know, kind of drawing it back to LPFM, too, I know that KOCZ down there in New Orleans is the LPFM station.
Yes.
Actually played a big role in kind of bringing people together and sharing information. So it really fulfilled that role of localism that LPFMs were designed to fill.
Yeah, there was a point where all the stations had not been broadcasting, and the low-power stations were the only ones that were able to keep broadcasting. Keep people aware of what was going on, and it's a lifeline of a community sometimes.
What new projects are on the horizon for the Indigo Girls?
We are going into the studio in February and work with Mitchell again and do a new record. And I'm working on a solo record too, in between things, and that hopefully will be done before the Indigos start again. So that's what's working on with that. And we did a series of benefits in the Southwest for Honor the Earth on some coal mining issues, and working with a group called the Just Transition Coalition to replace bad energy with good energy. And we're building some wind turbines, and we just actually finished another solar project that's going to go in with the Skull Valley Goshi Reservation in Utah. So we're just kind of chugging away at different things.
Do a lot of good work out there, and thank you for all the energy you put out there, as well as music. Before we wrap, I just want to thank you for taking time to speak with us today. I also want to remind listeners they've been tuned into KDRTLP 101.5 FM, Low Power Community Radio in Davis, California. And again, I've been speaking with the multi-talented Amy Ray of Indigo Girls fame. For more information about the Indigo Girls and Amy's solo work, you can just follow the many links off of www.indigogirls.com. And for more information about KDRT, please visit us at www.kdrt.org. This is Autumn Labbé-Renault, and you've been listening to Art Plus.
When we try to rework all of this, each to her rendition, we're painting ourselves in a corner, lost for ideas, blindly fishing for a compliment or kindness just to bring us into view. But you could not interpret me, and I could not interpret you. I remember that cold morning when the trees were black with birds. I tried to make out some connection, we were riding for words. After all that we've been through, I could not see giving up, despite the picture of our coffee growing colder in the cups. I want to say that underneath it all, you are my friend, and the way that I fell for you, I'll never fall.
Hi, this is Amy Ray from Indigo Girls, and you're listening to KDRT 101.5 FM, Davis, California.